Hi, I'm Coach MK, founder of the Fitness Protection Program. I'm a run coach, not a life coach. We're never really talking about the running. Running is the tool. It's the conduit we use to examine the world we live in, as well as its impact on our own lives and the lives of the people around us. How we react to certain people and to certain stories tells us a lot about how we view ourselves. I'm committed to the thoughtful, intentional exploration of the importance of running so that no one discounts their own badassery, ever. Final note, this podcast is geared towards every runner who won't lose their home, livelihood, or health insurance if they show up to the corral with a hangover. Not that I'm encouraging you to do that, just saying. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Fitness Protection Podcast. Hi, this is Coach MK. Going solo this week because I don't know if you've heard, but Coach Sarah has quit Harvard and will be with us full time. Yay! Starting on September the 1st. But for now, I'm just going to try to manage this all by myself. I'm probably going to screw it up 7 ways from Sunday. And for that, I apologize already to our amazing podcast editor, since I'm quite sure I have not connected things correctly. Things never work out well when Coach Sarah is not here. So for those of you that are just joining the stream, my name is Coach MK. I'm the founder of the Fitness Protection Program. And this is the weekly segment where I answer all the questions from participants in my programs, maintain and rebuild. This week, we've got 11 questions so far. And if you put your question in the last hour, I might not have seen it. So if you don't hear me going over your question, jump in really quickly, either on Twitch or on Facebook. I will be circling back to the comments on Twitch and Facebook at the end of the session, and I will respond to all of them. Just remember, I don't have Coach Siri with me today, so I'm not going to be able to read in one screen and respond in real time in the other simultaneously. I only got 2 eyes, y'all. I really need 3 computer screens, but we are not there yet from an investment perspective. So here we go. The questions that we have this week, going to start with rebuild. Question one, how much of avocado toast can be a warm-up / cool-down? What do you envision a warm-up and cool-down looking like? To be perfectly honest, I don't care. And I say that lovingly. When it comes to warming up and cooling down, all I talk about is easing into and then easing out of the run. And for me, that's either the first 10 minutes or the first mile, first 2 miles. Because I'm speaking to you in rebuild. There's a difference between what your body needs when it's really, really fit and you're preparing it to do really hard work on a speed day versus what we need to do when we are rebuilding just to get mentally and physiologically prepared to do whatever is on the calendar. Do not ever forget that you are doing some of the hardest work anyone will ever do. Everything's easy when you're fit. Everything is hard AF when you are not. So being able to actually complete avocado toast is a wonderful thing. For those of you that are listening, you're wondering what that is. Avocado toast is the name of a workout where it's instead of a stride sandwich, we take a series of accelerators and we throw them into the middle of a run. That's why it's called a stride sandwich. It's like an accelerator sandwich. When we put them at the end, it's more like an open-ended sandwich, one of those Swedish butterbrods. So I call it avocado toast. It is not a full sandwich. We've only got one. So you do your run and at the end you have your strides. So I recommend you just sort of ease into it. And if that's walking, that's fine. Do your silly toes, do your warm-ups, get your joints, tendons, and ligaments ready to go, and then go much more slowly than you want to. And I understand that 140 is already more slowly than you want, but if it means you're walking for the first 10 minutes just to loosen up, great, do that. Do not worry about pace. Pace is never the focus. Pace is a reward. It is not something you can actively pursue at this stage of the game, and it's going to be a really long time before that comes. So I would say like the first 10 minutes is plenty for the warm-up. The last 10 minutes is plenty for the cool-down. And those accelerators, the strides at the end, you do not need to cool down more after that. That's meant to sort of jack your metabolism a little bit, fire up the neurological connections or the neuropatterning to continue to bring you benefits throughout the day. You do not need a second cool-down after that. So what do I envision it looking like? Just like I said, easing into and easing out of. If that means you're walking and then shuffling, that's totally fine. With walking again to come out of it, that is fine. Don't worry about the pace. What we need is your body's weight on top of your ankles with your feet and your legs moving you forward. And I know that sounds silly, but the pace really doesn't matter. It matters that we are getting the critical adaptations and that your ligaments are ready to go. I will always be more concerned with those than I will your muscles. Because if you do the work, the muscles will adapt. If we do too much work too soon, your tendons, joints, and ligaments will not adapt. They'll be overloaded. And we're here to overload the muscles to get stronger, not the tendons, joints, and ligaments. It does not work that way. Yay. Next question. I would love to get to where I can do a real push-up. Up on toes, flat on the ground. Right now, I'm at best at a more vertical position, hands on the counter at a chair self height. Is the best way to work on it to do just like a lot, like a minute a day, wherever I am a few days a week, or resurrect the first set of SSSCs for a few weeks? I would also love to do an unassisted pull-up at some point, but that seems much further away. Okay, so there's a lot going on there. And this is the point where what you're talking about, people will often make it a function of weight and it makes me really angry. That's the wrong way to look at it. So everything is really a function of strength, a function of what your body is ready to do at this point in time. Because if you jump too far ahead too soon, you're going to make compensations, not adaptations. And we really want to avoid that. Compensations is what leads to overuse injuries. So when what you just described, let's think about the limiting factor. What is preventing you from doing a full push-up on the floor with your knees on the floor as it is right now? Is it the lack of core stability? Is it the lack of muscles in the back? Is it the lack of, does it just hurt your wrists to have your body weight on top of them? Make sure, number one, that whatever you're doing it in a good position. It is really easy to get the positioning for push-ups wrong. What I tell you to do, the way I show you to do it, is more of a tricep push-up, and that is much, much harder. But it's also harder to do it incorrectly. It is really easy to get it wrong and have a turtle back and have your shoulders for earrings. And I know when if you listen to this in the podcast, you're not going to see what I'm doing right now, but it looks really ridiculous. But if you watch people doing push-ups with their knees off the ground for the sake of trying to do something a little more advanced, or even being told to do something a little more advanced than they're ready to do, like those piece of garbage trainers on The Biggest Loser, I can't believe that show's coming back, then you're going to be making compensations, not adaptations. So meet your body where it's at. I would much rather you have your knees on the ground trying to go for a good tricep push-up, or at least a partial, just holding that position, holding that starting position for longer periods. That is a really great place to start. And don't worry about it. It takes whatever time it takes. The best way to get there is to make sure that whatever positioning you're doing now is accurate, it's correct. And that's the way you're going to get to where you want to go faster. Like, go directly into the full push-up position when your body isn't ready to do that isn't going to do you any good. Now, when it comes to doing a pull-up, that is a different kettle of fish entirely. That's going to be determined by the stability of your shoulder joints. That's another thing that I'm not a fitness specialist, but I have a lot of strong feelings about, because people close to me have been encouraged to do too much too soon in that regard, been told they were pansies because they said, actually, I have two torn rotator cuffs, so me doing this right now is not a good idea. And the trainer's been like, just do it, which is like the most garbage, lazy management. And if anyone says that to you, just leave. Just leave. You are not in a place where you're going to be heard or validated. Just stop paying that person. But when it comes to a pull-up, if we can't do a push-up yet, great, let's work towards that, because that is going to hinge on shoulder stability very, very much. And then when we have mastered the push-up, then let's change the plane of motion and attempt for a pull-up. But if we are right now at the point where getting your body and holding it off the ground is more than your joints can bear, do not count out the chin-up completely, but we need to make sure that what we're doing is working towards that in a methodical manner that will get you closer to the goal rather than closer to injury. So that is really going to be, again, a function of shoulder girdle stability and back strength. So there are a lot of different ways we can go about it. To be perfectly honest, you're better off working directly with a trainer on that goal, because anything I tell you is going to be stuff that I would have found necessarily on YouTube as well. So you're in rebuild for a reason. Let's not do too much too soon. Let's keep you moving forward in any way possible. And that's not going to happen if we do too much too soon and get injured. But pulling out SSSC number one is never a bad idea. If you go back into my old training plans and you still have copy of BOSU number one, I used to call it BOSU booty number one, which is the wibble wobble, the round the world and squats. You can never go wrong with that. I come back to that over and over and over again, because it's just one of the best series ever. And I've been, frankly, I might even do a set of it before I go on my run tonight, because after 4 to 6 weeks in bed recovering from the surgery, my booty needs it. So moving on to the questions from Maintain. You guys know who I am and where I'm at, I guess. Will you think less of me for yellowing a half the end of September? No, that's not how it works. It really, truly isn't. I don't think less of people for doing what you want to do or doing what you need to do. The only time I kind of back away with my hands in the air is when you do whatever you want to do and then say that my plans don't work when you don't get whatever it was you thought you were going to get. Because again, that's where it comes down to, is the reason you didn't get what you wanted really me? Is it really the plan, or is it the way you executed the plan? The trade-off, if I'm not going to sit here and scream, just do it at you, it means that, you know, you got to do exactly what I say to do, exactly how I say to do it, before you can go public and get me to back down and say that my plans don't work. They work, y'all. They're pretty good. Okay. So with that, I am still on the fence. If you're on the fence, cool. Definitely undertrained, not really feeling any kind of time goal right now, but always grappling with fear of being last. I feel like you kind of said it right there. I can't assure you, especially if you're a little undertrained, that you're not going to be last. If that's the sticking point, you need to ask yourself two questions. So the first question is, like, what good could possibly come from doing this half? And the second, what if you are last? if that is a fear that keeps you up at night, if that is something that would be so demoralizing that you would have trouble moving past it, then maybe now is not the time to do the half. Why would you be here? You know, I find this bind frequently with folks who sign up for full marathons and say, I just don't want to be last. I don't want to be swept. I don't want to be last. I don't want to be swept. And this fear of, well, no, I have to do it because I committed, but I don't want to be swept. So like backing yourself into a tight space between a rock and a hard place where it's like, I must do this, but I cannot do it this way. That's not a good place to be. That is not the sort of pressure that breeds good performance. It's the sort of thing, frankly, it's a bullshit stick that you're beating yourself with. And I would really prefer you guys didn't do that. So to continue reading your question, I'm always grappling with the fear of being last. I'm going to be fighting with myself about this. Until then, would running it be against coach's orders? No. A chance to stand up for my right to take up space? Maybe. Is it? You haven't said that in here. If so, are you nothing else in this question has indicated that you felt like you didn't. Is it a fool's mission? I don't know. What I think is this. You can be in all kinds of places and do all kinds of things and have all kinds of experiences without needing to run. And I say this lovingly as somebody that totally planned to run at 3 days at the fair. I totally thought I was going to show up and do the half marathon that started at 9 p.m. And it didn't work out that way. My health was not up to snuff. I knew that I would be lucky to get through the night. And I also knew that I needed to drive back to Philadelphia. I tried to do too much in one weekend. Didn't want to miss my 10-year reunion, but I also knew that we had so many people coming to this and the sheer number kind of like kept me awake at night. And I knew that I couldn't be in two places at once, but I couldn't miss either event either. So I really wasn't present in either place because my mind was constantly somewhere else and it was a short period of time. So I tell you that to tell you this, do you need to be at the race or do you need to be in the race? You can be at the race and not participate in the race if being there is what you need to do. If entering the race though, isn't exactly the same thing. You can be near a race and not enter it, just like I did at 3 days at the fair. Coach there was very generous about it where I was like, oh, you entered? Yeah, I didn't. Sorry. Sorry. And she had a perfectly good night anyway. So think about what you really need to get. I'm never going to be mad at anyone for running something before they're ready. The only time I'm going to be mad about it is if you haven't gone through this process like I just asked you to do, saying, you know, what did you hope to get out of it? And did you imagine the worst case scenario? Could you handle it? We're never going to be able to calculate the statistical probabilities of every worst case scenario. That's not what it's about. It's more about saying like, is this likely? Yeah, it's likely. Okay, if this is likely to happen, can I live with it? No. Then why am I doing it? There needs to be a really compelling reason. And so far, I haven't really seen one in here. So that's how I would approach this thought process. And that's exactly what I think about it with the limited information that I have. Running it is never going to be against my orders. It's not about like defying me. Because remember, I'm here to serve you guys. I'm not here to control you or control your lives. You know, but this is why I've tried to create a different pipeline where there's no demand that I control the outcome because there's no outcome I can promise ever. What I can say is that with a reset button at the beginning of every month in a subscription-based setting, you are more likely to get where you want to go and that much more likely to come back if you drift off each month than you would otherwise, where you would just be untethered and kind of feel bad about yourself. And that final note on that, the new newsletter that's going to be rolling out, Coach Sarah is going to be taking over the Coached and Loved brand. And in as such, we'll be taking over the Coached and Loved Facebook page and newsletter that goes along with it. I will still be assisting with the Morning Mantra, but she's going to have a little bit more ownership over that brand and everything that goes in at the softer side of running. While what I take on the things that we're not talking about when we're not talking about the running, I'll still be there. My voice will be present, but I know that anyone can carry on that MK tradition. Like no one will be better at it than Coach Sarah. Meanwhile, I'm going to go back to doing the things that I also love doing, but I really haven't had a good outlet for in a very long time. And that's writing the coach notes. That's doing the live streams where I talk through bad runner math and good choices and what that all looks like. And right now I don't have the bandwidth to do all the creative stuff that I want to do. And by kind of splitting the two brands, it's going to make it possible. And this is the sort of thing I would love to talk about in a fitness protection broadcast or as a note, either on the blog or in the newsletter. So all kinds of good things coming. The name of the newsletter that I'm going to be sending is called The Tether, not because there's any expectation that people are doing the workouts or staying with us, but rather it's a tether that as long as you're getting it and as long as you're part of the program, even if you're not paying me as a subscriber, if you're getting this newsletter, that's you are already one step closer to coming back into this good habit, into this good mindset, just by having that in your inbox, a reminder saying, hey, still here. I still care. I don't care what you were doing that caused you to, I wouldn't say get off track, but you know, you're an adult and you prioritize really, really well. If something else had to take priority over working out, cool. I'm never going to judge you for that. You don't need more willpower and you never needed accountability. What you needed is a safe space to be who you are and to do this thing in public. When you don't feel overly 100% secure. And there have been plenty of times when I didn't, and I felt like a fraud putting on my run shoes and running around this place. That was really hard. What I needed a run buddy for to make sure I got it done was to make sure that I felt like I belonged, even though I've done this activity my entire life. There were periods when I did not feel qualified to do it. And if ever there was a period when you felt like you needed more willpower or more accountability, that's the wrong way to look at it. That's looking at you and saying that you are missing something in some way, which I disagree with completely. I don't think that's true. The only thing you were lacking was not something internal. It was a safe space to be who you are out in the world. And the final note on this, if that is really what you've been lacking, instead of beating yourself up about it, like, again, there's nothing wrong with you. Let's operate on the presumption that what you lack is either time or resource or a safe space to do this running thing in. So let's work that out on a day-to-day basis before we get too wrapped around the axle with the race. Because like I said, you can go without having to be in it and have just as good a time, if not a better time. And if you're planning on being one of those people in the yurt with Coach Sarah, photos or it didn't happen. Yay! Next question. So I'm not a stranger to 2-hour workouts, but they are swim, bike, run, or just bike. I ran 5 days a week since May, but only 30 to 40 minutes at a time. Keeping my heart rate under 140 is easy for the first 45 minutes. I have to make myself run faster to get it up to 140. It's not fast. I'm just really good at slow. Yay, you! You don't need to get it up to 140, by the way. I don't care. 140 is a cap. It is an effort cap. It is not a target. Remember, while I'm trying to do like my niche where I'm playing in this industry of fitness and running, is I'm teaching people what easy effort is rather than telling that you are fat, slow, lazy, and terrible, and you got to work harder. I'm here being like, whoa, you don't have to beat yourself up on a day-to-day basis to be worthy. You never did. I'm really sorry anyone made you feel this way, but we need to back off. If we're going to do this every day, then we need to go a little less intensely on a day-to-day basis. Otherwise, this is something that is not going to stick. So if you're really good at slow, you don't have to get it up to 140 ever, ever, ever. If I have not communicated that clearly, now you know 140 is an effort cap. It is not a target. I don't ever need you to try to get your heart rate up to 140 for any reason. Most of the time, I end up on a slight incline at the end, but even on flats, I have this. It's just lack of running fitness. Yes. Yes, it is, to be perfectly frank. It doesn't mean that, like, we tend to talk about things on a binary spectrum, like I'm fit or I'm fat or I'm great or I suck. It's a bad paradigm. So all you're looking at, especially if you're trying to get your heart rate up to 140, let's just start wherever you're at and see if you can hold on to that for a little bit longer. That is kind of how the body works. When we're talking, for example, like if you're a one pace pony and your 5K pace is your 10K pace is your half marathon pace, but the only distance where you've successfully held on to that pace from start to finish is say the 5K, then I'd say then that's not your 10K pace. It would need to be a little bit slower than wherever you ran your 5K, if you see what I'm saying. So if you're having trouble hanging on and then your heart rate's out of control and you're slowing down towards the end of the workout, then yes, you might be overshooting a little bit. I would back it off. And then over time, it won't take very long for that correction to happen. I wouldn't say like it's something like you lack and we need to fix as much as it is. I don't necessarily have it right now either. Take a look at any of my runs on Strava. My power output, my cadence, nothing will change. But then my heart rate just starts to like go up around the 40 minute mark. That's because I took several weeks off. It's not a bad thing, but it is something that it is a good measure of your fitness for endurance, of your aerobic flexibility over time. And it is something that we need to improve if at some point you want to race. Now, if you're not a racer and you're not going to race anything and you're like, marathon, what's that? Half, no way. Great. Keep doing what you're doing and just like walk the last 15 minutes and listen to a podcast. Don't worry about it. It's all good. So what do you do? Do you go super slow during that time? I wouldn't worry about that time. I would worry about what you're doing before it. So if we slow down the first 45 minutes a little bit, you're probably going to be able to hold on to that for a full 60 minutes. And then over time, that pace will get a little faster and you'll be back to where you run those first 45 minutes right now. I'm still working up to long run times to maintain as I don't want injury. Yay for good decisions. Keep doing that. I never said, and I made it very clear in the membership area of the website, how I would want you to ramp things up. I am very proud of you for listening to that and not being really stressed out that you can't do the plan exactly as written, because it's not about doing the plan exactly as written. I'm still working up to long run times to maintain as I don't want injury. My longest run has been 85 minutes. Yay! I'm about to do an 85 minute run after this broadcast. I can't wait. Oh, and you just started in August. Oh, thank you. I'm so glad you're here. Thank you for giving my small business a try. And thank you for trying to adopt something very different. You are not deficient in any way. All I would say is like, you might be looking at this a little incorrectly. If you're fine for 45 minutes and then not fine for the last 15, then all we got to do is back off those first 45 minutes and then the last 15 will fall into place. If you're like, nope, I cannot slow down. This is going to make me too angry and I'm going to quit. All right, cool. Keep doing what you're doing. Slow down those last 15 minutes and don't worry about it. You need to do whatever's going to keep you motivated and moving. And change that you is not going to happen overnight, right? All the conditioning that you've had, the things you've been taught that really matter and care care about, you're not going to drop those in one day, and I don't expect you to. That would be completely unreasonable. What is reasonable is figuring out what do you need to keep moving forward. And if you are demotivated and demoralized every day, then you're not going to stick to this or anything else. And I don't want that. So let's try as an experiment, just so we have a baseline and we know what the right answer is, or the true answer is versus like the right answer to give, and do a couple of runs a little bit slower and see if you can hold on to it for the full hour. Like, again, never getting your heart rate up to 140, just finding your happy pace, finding your happy effort level and staying there. If you can hold on to it for the full hour without having that drift, awesome. Ask yourself, how long can I keep doing this? If there's a psychological or a mental strain that comes along with going slower, then that's when the whole equation shifts a little bit, becomes a little bit different. But honestly, at this stage of the game, you haven't said anything that makes me worry in any way, unless you're like, well, I was planning on ending the 10 ramp marathon or the 10 week marathon ramp next month. I'd be like, could we not? Thanks. Let's give it 2 to 3 months before doing that. But yeah, you're good. You're good. You're totally good. Keep hanging out. Next question. Hi, I'm Kane and Sarah, but Sarah isn't here. She isn't here. I noticed major differences this week in the strength circuits. I usually do them with shoes off, but this week I did them with shoes on at the gym. Yay. My feet cramped up so badly, like I was squeezing my feet to balance. Yep. What's that about? Should I keep them doing them barefoot or continuous shoes? Is that instability a good thing? Thanks. Well, that is a really interesting question. I'm old. I've been doing this for a very long time. My first pair of running shoes did not have any cushion on them. They were a pair of tennis shoes, K-Swiss, I think, or K-Swiss. In my brain, they look like K-Swiss style. It was very, very minimal all the way around. There was no cushioning even at the neck. And that I still to this day prefer to run in the most minimal upper possible. And I don't want anything that squishes anywhere in the shoe. If you were to dunk my shoes in water, there is no material in my shoes that would absorb that water. I tend to run in Ons, and like I even year round, I train in my racing Ons, my racing flats, because I just don't like anything more than that. And this is why. Whenever you're adding cushion to the bottom of your shoe, your feet are trying to, your toes specifically, are trying to find stability. So when you're doing these barefoot, and you're the way Alex Lanton really, not me, the way Alex Lanton wants you to, let's blame him. Then what's going to be happening is you're going to be engaging your entire kinetic chain, specifically your posterior chain, in the way that we want to get the benefit of each workout. When you put those squishy shoes on your feet that kind of roll in or have your toes invert in some way, then you're going to spend a little bit more time fighting for balance. I would not categorically say this is better because, oh yeah, you get vestibular training on top of that. Whee! No, that's what the BOSU's for. We're not trying to get that. Like, if you notice it feeling significantly different with shoes on, then let's just try to keep doing it with shoes off. I would not say that is adding a desired element. There are other, better, more secure ways to add that desired element. But my final thought on this is that there are scientific studies about foot strike that they're out there, right? You don't even necessarily just Google it. You can see the word, your foot pressure matters, and there's a connection with your brain. So if you are in a more stable shoe, if you are in a more cushioned shoe, your foot and your brain, in order to feel secure in whatever you're doing, and this is a reflex, every time your foot hits the ground, if it doesn't feel hard, if it's not a strike, then your brain gets a little confused. So the softer your shoe, the harder your foot strike is going to be to get that security. So having a bigger cushioned shoe is actually forcing you to slam the ground harder. You're not protecting yourself more from damage. You're causing more damage to happen, which is why when I say, like, my goal for me was to work my way strength-wise back into a neutral shoe, that is what I'm talking about, and that's what I'm thinking about. So if your feet are cramping up, that's probably because we're not doing something that we need to do. And yes, you totally could have been squeezing your toes to balance. When your posterior chain is not engaging properly, then your glutes will not be engaging. Your toes are going to be curling up in your shoe, trying to find that sense of stability. And if you're really making your feet do the work, then that means your glutes are not getting the benefit of the workout that we need them to get. So that's the long and the short of it. That is what this is about. I would absolutely continue to do them barefoot. That type of instability is not what we want, especially if you're cramping. Yay! So next question. I'm having a rough August. Me too. And tomorrow's mantra is about that, y'all. Oh my gosh. Have you heard that Uranus is in retrograde? I did not know that was a thing. And my barista at a coffee shop earlier this week had the misfortune of asking me, how are you doing? And I was like, terrible. And I started crying right there and told him exactly what was going on, because you know what? The coffee shop was empty and he should not have asked if he didn't want to know. Turns out this guy has a roommate who is an astrology influencer. Such a thing evidently exists, but he would say, well, I think the universe just needed you to hear this message today. And this is why you're asking me. And he gave me this beautiful spiel that is going to that form the basis for the mantra tomorrow about what Uranus in retrograde actually is. And that all of us are probably having a rocky August in different ways for different reasons. And it's kind of fascinating, but it could be leading somewhere great no matter what's going on. And I see you're about to tell me. So I'm having a rough August. It started with a chipped tooth needing a root canal. Ugh. While waiting, an abscess was misdiagnosed. I got antibiotics and an emergency root canal. Bless your heart. All during this time, I couldn't eat properly or hydrate well because of pain. Now I have a raging UTI, probably because of the antibiotics. Uh-huh. I have just been miserable. I tried to stay on track for my marathon, which is wine glass, but mostly avocado toast 3 times a week and a long run. You're good. That's better than nothing. I did manage a 3-hour run this past week. I'm just feeling like this might not be my year for a marathon. I can drop to the half. Wine glass is interesting because the full has a 6:30 cap and the half has a 7-hour cap. Yep. I did the marathon last year in 6. I know it's a conversation I need to have with myself, but I'm not sure what to do. And maybe I'm asking for justification to drop down to the half. I know I can yellow a half fairly easily. The half would be no pressure. Enjoy my weekend and enjoy my family and visit the Glass Museum. Yes, Glass Museum. Plus, we've got a lot of people that are going to be there at that race. It's going to be a good weekend. Not me, unfortunately. But however, I could attempt the full and see what I've got. The cutoff scares me some. My paces are not there yet. Any advice? Okay. So I want to say, first of all, that what's happening now is not necessarily a good predictor of what's going to be happening in August. Let's give it a few more weeks. When it comes to wine glass, you don't have to decide today. And you also don't have to finish. I am all about the DNF and DNS. If you remember, back in the past 4 years, since 2016, I DNF'd Jack and Jill, withdrew from Chicago, ran Philadelphia, withdrew from the LA Marathon, and DNF'd Pittsburgh, right? So at 5 races in 18 months, I completed one successfully. And I don't have a problem with that. There was the right choice at every call. And when LA didn't work out, I'm like, okay, Pittsburgh, it's fine. And, you know, I don't love throwing money away, but I'm not so obsessed over that I'm going to like wreck the one body that I have. I can earn more money. I can't fix this body. There's only so much more breakage I've got left, you guys. I'm no spring chicken. I'm good with that too. So I tell you that to tell you this. What would it take for you to feel confident? What I'm hearing is a lack of confidence and you're a little beaten down right now. Let's give it a week or two and wait for the antibiotics to kick in, for the probiotics that I'm hopefully you're taking, the kombucha you're drinking to restore a little bit more gut health. Let's wait for life to come back together again a little bit. And it is. Even according to my barista, we got 2 more weeks of mayhem and then September is going to be the worst of it'll be over and it's going to be disorienting all the way through to January. And you know what? It doesn't have to be true. It doesn't have to be accurate, but what else have we got? In times of uncertainty, I kind of like the notion of, okay, some astrologer once upon a time says that we've got 2 more weeks of crap and then everything's going to level out. I'll take it. I'm willing to believe that because again, why not? So let's think about, give it a couple more weeks. Let things level out. If they don't level out, then you've got your answer. If you still aren't feeling good, we can always do this next year. Unless dropping down, which I hate that phrase too. Drop down to the half. If switching races is going to demoralize you, if you're going to feel bad or like a loser, then if you're going to judge yourself harshly for that, then we need to have a different conversation. But before I answer firmly, what do I need to do? There's a lot of time. It sounds like you've been doing plenty of work. It wasn't all of the assigned work, but that doesn't matter. You've been doing at least 75% of the work 90% of the time. You're good. It might not be the perfect race, but you also haven't taken the equivalent of 6 weeks off and I'm still running New York. So what you need to focus on is what have you been doing? And what you've been doing is badassing through a really tough period. You are still here and you are still running. Do not count this marathon out yet. And yeah, it's totally possible. Remember, there's a woman named Melissa Yakuzo, who showed up to 3 days at the fair not thinking that she was fit enough to do a half or trained enough to do a half, who pulled 40 miles out over like an 18-hour period or something ridiculous like that. It was a whole lot of miles, you guys. There's no reason why that too could not be you, because if this is who I'm thinking it is, you've been here for a while. You're one of the first in the door. You've got more behind you than you'd think you do. Do not discount what you were doing for the months leading up to the 10-week marathon ramp, and don't conflate 3 weeks of things not working out and not doing everything that you're used to doing. Like 3 weeks of bad, unless you're injured, that's not going to negate what we were doing for the 4 months prior to this. You've got more than you think you do. I believe in you. But if you, like, we got to ask, where is your sense of confidence going to come from in your training, in your event? don't answer that yet, but let's wait for that to present. And maybe it's from the next long run. Maybe you'll have your first long run after Labor Day when it's a little bit cooler and you're feeling a little bit better and you're back on schedule because the kids are in school. God knows I'm going to feel better when that happens. Everything might change. Everything might shift. So I would hate for you to make a decision that would throw away what you've been doing and thinking about for the past 4 months only because of a couple of bad weeks. Now, if you do decide to switch races, that is not throwing away work. That is self-care. That's preserving yourself. I don't think we are yet to the self-care point. So let's give it a couple more weeks. Think about it. And if you aren't feeling better when it's a little bit cooler and life is a little more calm, we'll make a call then. But just know that there's nothing lesser or less than about being where you are right now. It is just Uranus is in retrograde. It hasn't been in retrograde for a very long time. Evidently, the first time was last year. And we've got 4 more cycles of it coming up. So with this happening, at least for the next 4 falls, awesome. Let's just try to preserve ourselves and love ourselves all the way through it. Okay. Because August has frankly sucked for me too. My son came home on Friday with a really nasty virus and a fever of 106. Nobody in the house managed to get it, but one other person, our nanny. So I'm not going to have nanny for the rest of the week. I'll be lucky to get any running done at all. I'm going for my long run as soon as this broadcast is over. And that is probably going to be a disaster because it's really, really hot. And I don't know if I'm going to get to run again this week. So that's my August. All that means for me is kind of like saying, you know, we'll see what happens in New York. Hands in the air. I'm going to deal and keep going. If you are not the sort of person who can do that, though, it's good to know that way to be self-aware. Let's find a way to love yourself and protect yourself all the way through this period. But just know that how I am proud to coach and love you. I really, really am. First, another shout out. Congrats, Coach Sarah. Whoop, whoop, whoop. And congrats to me for getting Coach Sarah. I'm so excited. Yay. Next, no question. Just really need some pep talks. I got pep talks. Last 2.5 weeks were really filled with adulting. Cars broken into, passport stolen, rescheduled last week of vacation, and then came back to an epic shitstorm at work. I have fallen off the strength wagon for the last 2 weeks, been less than 75% of my runs. I know this will pass. I know I can and still have lots of time. This was to be week 1 on the on-ramp. Just need a bit of encouragement today and to feel a bit of the famous coach and love for my 2 favorite coaches this week. Sorry, as luck would have it, you're only getting 1, but I'm going to give you a double dose of MK to overcompensate for the fact that Sarah is not here right now, but I'll make sure she also touch base with you tomorrow. Any suggestions on how to brush myself off and get back to it? Other than just doing it, of course. Like I just said, Uranus is in retrograde. Most of us are having a complicated month. When I talk about Mercury being in retrograde, that's when lots of little petty things kind of fall by the wayside. Little petty things just sort of add up. Like you get a flat tire and then your kids have head lice and you're like, what is going on? Oh, Mercury's in retrograde. Of course, Uranus is a little bit bigger. So yes, it's an off month for everyone for sure. And everything that you just described sounds really, really tough, really, really terrible. I am so sorry. I'm so sorry for that, but way too adult all the way through it. You've got so much time. You've been doing such a great job. I'm pretty sure I know who this is because there's only one person I can think of on Instagram that had a car break in during a vacation recently. And you are a badass. You've got so much going for you. You have been running consistently for so long. This is 1 week. 1 week is not going to define your race. The 4 months of prep before entering the ramp will define your race. I just couldn't convince anyone of that in any of my previous roles because everybody comes here and thinking, looking for the magic workout or the magic training plan, as opposed to the magic system that's going to keep them going year round and keep them fit enough that they can just opt into a 10-week marathon ramp whenever they feel like it. This is really the way we need to go. 1 week is not going to define you unless you put too much emphasis on this week. Don't give this week or this time more concern than it deserves. This is going to pass. This is going to be over very soon. We just got 2 more weeks of really crazy stuff. And then the break is. So when you talked to me, at least about Uranus in retrograde, he was like, so it feels, and that started on my birthday, by the way, on August the 12th. So he's like, it's like everything shatters, everything, like little things that were actually provided comfort and stability. They're not going to be here anymore. And he gave some very specific examples that had me chill because I'm like, you don't know me, but it's like, know me. So I kind of took this pretty seriously. The changes that are going to be coming will continue through the rest of the month. And we're going to have to find new ways of doing things or new ways of finding little bits of self-confidence and comfort. So with that in mind, the worst of the breakage is going to end with August. And then the rest of the year, it's going to be forming new patterns and new ideas. So know this, you've got 2 more weeks of crap before everything else falls into place. We're not going to let 1 week or 2 weeks, much less 3 of this season, undo what we've been doing before and define what's going to happen going forward. So I know you have been working through crazy stuff. You have been traveling all over the world doing a job that blows my mind on a regular basis. I cannot believe you run marathons on top of what you do for a living. It is amazing to me. And with all the travel that you have to do, it's amazing to me. And you have actually faced a lot more than you've mentioned in this question right here. And I know this because even when I'm not in there commenting, I am reading and I am always watching. I can't take my eyes off you. I have not been able to yet. What you're doing is amazing. Don't discount all the stuff that I've been watching for the past 4 months for a couple of bad weeks. You have never been defined by your worst day before, and you won't be now. Hang in there and keep moving forward, girl. I got you. And you got this. And Coach Sarah is sending me a note right now, and she says, tell her I'm sorry I can't be there to coach and love you on the air tonight, but man, I'm so proud of her, and hashtag respect for all she's dealing with. You're awesome, and I really hope that your kid picks a college in Boston. There you go. Next question. I'm loving having a plan and being part of this awesome group, but it is a lot of running for me. Yeah, I feel you. It's a lot of running in general. I'm about to get super busy. I know we can always do avocado toast, but do you think the following is okay as a general plan for a busy September? Monday, Wednesday is written. Tuesday and Friday, 45 minutes, maybe with strides. Saturday, at least 95 minutes with strides or pickups. Ideally, the amount is written plus the strength is written. The only race on my calendar is a 5K in November. Yeah, that sounds fine. The whole notion of being here is not about perfection. It's about maintaining some semblance of consistency. What tends to happen in the two previous examples I gave, imagine with these two individuals, if they had been on like traditional 16-week marathon training plan, that's 4 weeks out of 16 that have gone sideways. Wow. Then that's a big enough portion that we have to start changing the conversation about what to expect on race day. Those 4 weeks can define the next 10 in a really negative way. That's not what we're doing where we are right now. It's about finding a way to maintain a decently high volume of not just fitness, but consistency, a high volume of consistency when it comes to our running, because I hear it said all the time. If I don't have a race on the calendar, I don't run, or I do what feels good. And that's less and less and less until I'm not doing anything. And then I put another race on the calendar and it becomes this boom bust cycle. So by being here, yeah, we're adapting your life. I think of running for me as self-care. So what I'm really adapting is making sure that there's a whole lot of self-care in my life. People like to say running is my therapy. Therapy is my therapy. Running is my self-care. It's how I take care of my body to make sure I can be here longer for my kids. It's how I take care of my mind so that I have some part of my day with no demands on it. Because I run with a burner phone that only the most, my innerest of inner circles, meaning my husband and my mother, they have that number and pretty much nobody else. So whatever you've got can wait for an hour until my run is done on a day-to-day basis. With that in mind, all I ask is that if you keep running through this month, what you said right here, it sounds completely fine to me. All I ask is that you don't get too aggressive about wanting to use the marathon ramp. I know you said you've got nothing on the calendar. Don't get too aggressive or talk yourself into getting on the marathon ramp sooner than the end of October, right? Because we really need to have longer long runs if we're going to use that 10-week ramp. If you're like, nope, that's not me. There's no way I'm running Houston or Phoenix or Tucson or any of the good winter races. Do what you got to do, but just keep running and you're winning. And that plan sounds fine to me. Is there a way to incorporate the marathon ramp into Training Peaks? Do we have the ability to modify workouts in a plan if we have the premium version? Yes, you have the ability to modify workouts and move things around if you have the premium version. There is not a way to incorporate the marathon ramp into Training Peaks just yet. That's coming. But right now we've got limited resources, and that is something that is going to take time to get in. So it might be an upsell. And right now I wanted to add it all free. And I wanted to be like, when you subscribe to Fitness Protection, all the training plans are free. And this is kind of step one. I'm hoping that we'll have a bit more growth through the rest of the year. And at that point, then yes, everything will be going into Training Peaks. We got big plans coming up, and that is one of the things that's on the list that you should expect to see in 2020. I can't promise it'll be up and ready to go any sooner than that. Yay. But yes, it's coming in. I hear you. Hi, can you please run through your suggested race strategy for a half? Thanks. Don't die. That's it. So when it comes to the half marathon, I like to take a look at the course map and I want to see what is there. A lot of elevation change. Don't come at me with a net number, because that is a really good way to trick yourself, is to say like, well, it's a net flat course. I'm like, net flat? Net flat? That's like my chest. Well, I've got it here, but it pokes out here, but it's net flat. What is that? I don't know. Good logic leads to bad decisions all the time. So I would definitely take a look at the course map and see. Maybe the biggest rise is only 30 feet, so it practically looks flat in Strava. If there is a 30-foot rise every mile, I would say that those are going to add up really, really quickly, especially if you haven't been doing the strength. So my race strategy for a half is just kind of look at that half and see what the demands of the course are and reconcile that with the energy output over how long it is you think you're going to be out there. So the way that we would race, say, a 90-minute half is pretty different than we would race 3-hour, 30-minute half. One is not better. One's just 2 hours shorter. And the way we have to be a little more conservative with how we expend our energy over a longer period than over a super duper short period. So the way I would look at it is, first, go and look and see if there's anything in the course that could be an outlier and throw you for a loop. Meaning, are you going to be running over a bridge? Is there a big uphill somewhere? Is there a part where you're actually off-roading on a trail? All of that is going to impact your strategy. Then take a look at where you're going to be and the time of year it is, right? So if you're running in Phoenix in the summer, hopefully they don't have halves down there because, I mean, a dry heat's lovely, but you're going to be running at night, potentially. Are you ready for that? See if and I'm not saying like such a race exists. I'm literally making that up. What you need to think about, is this a half that you've run before? Is this something cool that's an experience that might have a wrinkle in it, like running in Phoenix at night? I'm sure there's some things just to be cognizant of. Ask anyone who lives in Phoenix and tell them you want to go for a 2-hour night run. I'm sure they will have something to tell you, something to say about that, and a little advice to give. Go find that stuff and get that advice from people who know. And then finally, it would be conserve, preserve, reserve, serve, which is the generic advice I give everyone of every distance. And I like to divide every race up into 4 parts. That just keeps me moving a little bit more easily. But there's also some thin privilege or fast privilege here, whatever you want to call it, strong privilege, where, you know, most of the time when I've been planning marathons, I've been planning for 4 hours or less. So when my marathon plan was always conserve, reserve, preserve, serve, hour by hour over here for a marathon. And for a half, it was in 4 or less, usually less, 30-minute blocks. So it's not about predicting the perfectly perfect finish time, about like the difference between a 2:18 and a 2:45. In all honesty, for most humans, it's a couple of good choices. Because if you can avoid walking, then if you can just go out there and run, even at a pace that you don't love and hold on to that pace the whole time, you will finish faster than if you go out faster and then have to walk. And that's where I call bad runner math. So look at the course and identify the places where bad runner math could happen. The hills that add up too quickly, the hills that other people run up that you might run up in the beginning of the course because you don't want to feel behind. And all of a sudden, the end of the race is determined by what you've now done, the energy you've expended in the front. Banking time is stupid. It is just a notion that does not work. What you need to bank is energy. And you can blow the doors off at the end. That gives us good information for how to plan the strategy next time. But that is my general strategy. And I that might feel a little too vague. And I'm sorry, but I don't know what race you're running. I don't know what time of year it is. I don't know who I'm talking to. Without context, it's hard to give more specificity than that. Take a look at how long you can reasonably expect to be out there. And then identify what's out of bounds, which is what I really wanted you guys to do with the EAT, and don't go out of bounds. 2 minutes per mile for most people, 2 minutes per mile faster than their easy effort pace is a decent proxy for their tempo pace or their 10K pace. You do not need to exceed that figure if you've had trouble hitting it in some of the harder workouts. Also go back if you're like, well, I don't know what number it's going to be. It's probably going to be roughly 90 seconds faster than your easy effort pace. Go back and look at what your heart rate has done on some of those harder workouts and ask yourself, what did that feel like? What was that day? Can I bank on being able to do that or longer on race day? And if that answer is absolutely not, let's find a number that's a little bit less than that. Stick it in one of the McMillan or VO2 or Jack Daniels VO2 Max calculators. See what number falls out and then make our plan from there. But you've got more data than you think you do. It's not about predicting the future. It's about looking at the workouts and the training that you've done to come up with a good framework to understand what your body has been doing before making a bet on what it can do that day. We tend to talk about things in the abstract, not really giving ourselves credit for the work that we've done or looking at the hard workouts that we've done, but there's a lot of information in there. I would strongly advise you to look for some of those pieces of information, pull them together, and that is where your race plan is going to come from. And this is the sort of thing I probably need to address in a live stream once I'm free to do more fitness protection stuff. Last question. My local running club hosts a Wednesday morning hill run. There are 1 to 2 people who I can keep up with on my easy effort pace, so I like to join them. I'm having a hard time with the idea of skipping the track workout on Wednesday. Are hills enough of a workout? Can I slide the prescribed Wednesday workout to Thursday? That's really tough to say. So as we start pulling this apart, I don't want you to leave behind all of the things that you love about running. You don't have to abandon everything you do and everyone you know in order to work with me. If you love being part of this running group, great. Go do that. I don't want you to feel deprived, because once you feel deprived or restricted, then effectively you're on a diet and that diet's not sustainable, and I want this to be sustainable. So Absolutely. Go join the hill run. You're having a hard time with the idea of skipping the track workout on Wednesday. I assume you mean my harder effort workout on Wednesday. I wouldn't worry about that. So hills and track are kind of fungible. It's one for one. Hills are going to build strength. They're good for you. But it's a different type of thing when we're running abnormally fast on a track in a track setting. So what you don't need to do is do two hard workouts back to back. You can shift everything forward if you want and do your track on Monday and then do their hill work on Wednesday. That's fine. Just be cognizant of burnout because that's two really hard workouts for the week. And I don't have a good idea. You haven't told me here how long, if this is ongoing, is this year round Hilly Wednesdays? I don't know. Not to say that's a bad idea, but if this is something that we're going to be incorporating for a long time, then we need to make some longer term plans. So maybe remind me of this question tomorrow in the Facebook group and tag me in it. And I can come back with a little bit more thorough or satisfying answer. But if you're asking, are hills enough of a workout? Hills are a terrific strength building workout. But if you don't have the glute strength to do them, you're going to be tearing up your knees. So be very cognizant of your form. Be very cognizant of your strength levels. And then by all means, go join the run club that you love. And we'll find a way to keep you going on this plan while accommodating theirs. I would not do hills on Wednesday and track on Thursday. If anything, I would do the Wednesday workout on Monday. The only people I'm aware of that do three hard workouts each week are Olympic 5K distance or shorter runners. So if you're doing the 3,000 meter steeplechase, you're probably doing three hard workouts a week. If you're Steph Roos and you're doing getting ready to race the 5K at Nationals, you're doing three hard workouts a week. If you're Molly Huddle and you're getting ready for a professional half marathon, or you're a professional half marathoner, you're probably doing two hard workouts a week. If you're Molly Huddle and you're pivoting to, or you're Steph Roos and you're pivoting to a marathon training season, you're probably only doing two hard runs per week. If that is what the pros do, I can't give you permission in good faith to do more hard workouts than the fittest people in the world are doing. So if I were you, you're gonna have to make a choice, and that's okay. But you know what? These aren't specific workouts that I've given you. They're just here to keep you moving, to have some fun, and to keep your base level of fitness high and reward the people that are here all the time. You're going to get fitter over time. You're going to get faster over time. There is no magic workout. The magic comes from consistency. And we can find a way to incorporate Wednesday, but you're going to have to drop one of my runs. I'm okay with that. You're not throwing money away when you do that too. You're ensuring longevity. Look at it that way, please. Hello, hello. I have an EAT on the schedule for next Monday. Yay! Are there instructions? I haven't done one in well over a year, so I can't remember the details. Yes, and hopefully that's a good bad signal. I'm going to have to reach out to my wayfinder. I have a new way that I want to present this information that hopefully gets us different results. But what I had aimed to do with the EAT, which is the Enhanced Anaerobic Threshold Workout, it's been a staple of my coaching canon since 2014. I love this workout. It's a very good workout. It is also scary to most people who do it. At first, there was something called the Cooper Test. I remember the first time I tried to administer the Cooper Test on a track with a whole bunch of people at different fitness levels, it was a disaster. Because the one thing I had not accounted for when I started coaching was that most people did not know how to race. They were not really great judgments of how long can I hold on to this pace or this effort level. They were one pace ponies. And by that, like, what's your 5K pace? 8 minute miles. What's your 10K pace? 8 minute miles. What's your marathon pace? 8 minute miles. What's your marathon PR? 5:32. Like that. Okay, that's not 8 minute miles. All right. So something's off here. And if you are a one pace pony, that's fine. A lot of people are. I'm not here to judge it. I'm just here to guide you towards better. So with that end, the EAT I found better than the Cooper test, because the Cooper test is 20 minutes of all out running. And I would have people that would run out of steam and have to walk for 2 or 3 minutes to recover and then keep going. And that invalidates the Cooper test. So what I found to be easier was the EAT, because that gave us bands. And you could say, all right, so your heart rate needs to be between like 150, but no higher than 159 on the A portion. The B portion, 160 to 169. And then the C portion, 170 plus. That was the first iteration of it. And that was a nightmare because people were like already so high. Like their heart rates were already so high that it just like kept shooting to the moon and I couldn't get anyone to do it properly. So the final version of it, the one that you might have seen in the past, and what you're going to be seeing when my wayfinder comes up with presents this information in a different way, I ask you to keep your heart rate like between 160 and 169 and then over 170 and then 185 plus. Blow as hard as you can go. And it's not about nailing it. It's about finding the gears. Where is my half marathon gear? Where is my 10K gear? And where's my 5K gear? So the reason we do the EAT is to make sure that you have an idea of what those gears are and what those paces kind of look like. Because if 8 minute mile is what you do when you're blowing the doors off and you're like, I couldn't sustain that for more than the 5 laps you asked me to run, then there is no way that that number or a number faster than that is going to be your marathon pace at the end of the training cycle. So that's what it's for. I will get more and further instructions to you later. If you're hearing this now, don't panic about writing it down. I will get this to you as quickly as possible. I'm going to touch base with my wayfinder 100 nights. She works really, really quickly. We'll try to get the document, the new document and its new presentation to you very shortly. That'll make it clear not only what to do with the EAT, but what to do with the results and the information that the EAT provides. Yay! And also Coach Sarah just did it. And I'm going to be playing with her tomorrow for a little while before her vacation really starts. So I'm going to, you know what? I might just volunteer her to do a Facebook Live and talk about it, but we might do a video too. God knows what's going to happen now that me and Coach Sarah are going to be creating content all the time, but I'm super duper excited to see what we're doing and where we're going to go. Thank you. I'm glad that made you laugh out loud, Amanda. Yes, what the segments are 2 kilometers each. And the reason for that is I was having people setting 5K PRs in the EAT. And again, that's good information. That means you aren't racing your 5K hard enough. And that was always really good. If you're setting a 5K PR in the middle of a 6 kilometer exercise, then yay, you've got more potential than you think you did. Or if you go out there and die, then great. That's good information too. It's all information. It's amoral. It's neither good nor bad. And it doesn't point to anything about the person. And I know people really like to read into it and be like, what does it mean? And like, I promise you, it means nothing. We're just coming up with guidelines that tell you where you are in your body, where your body is at this point of time, and making sure that you don't blow up later. Because trying to tell you exactly what to do on race day is impossible. It's not about like how good I am as a coach. And if you want to make it that cool, great. Go with God. But really, it's about your fitness level. When you are an empty tube of toothpaste, like Steph Rothstein, or a fine-tuned machine, like her 5K pace is something like a 5:18 and her marathon pace is a 5:40, right? That is a 22-second difference, right? That is a narrow, narrow range. Ours are much broader. Like your 5K pace might be 7:15 and your marathon pace a 9:30. Like there's something beautiful in that. Trying to prescribe a number to Steph Rothstein is going to be a lot easier than trying to prescribe a number to a runner of lesser fitness because she's professional. I don't train her, so I don't want to say she's as fit as she could possibly get, but she's got to be pretty close. That's why athletes dope, right? It's so that they can extend those limits, what they've tapped out. I'm as strong as I could possibly get. I'm as fast as I could possibly get. And that's when they start introducing the exogenous measures to make them go even faster. We don't have to do that. All we can do is work out a little more consistently, a little bit smarter, sleep a little bit more, eat a little bit better. We are a full tube of toothpaste, man. You can squeeze anywhere and get really terrific results. So it's not about like predicting the future perfectly as much as it is having a good idea of when you're burning up the Bonneville. Because it's like that car was not designed to go 300 miles, no, 0 to 300, Bubba. Of course it was going to melt. You didn't take care of the chassis. So if we're here to take care of your chassis. We're here to make sure that you can do this year round and that when you show up on race day, you know what not to do, which is much better instruction than you're going to get at this point in your fitness journey. Because gosh, you know, fitness is not my full-time job. It's somehow I work in the fitness industry, but it's still being fit. Keeping this body fit is not my full-time job. So we don't have their lifestyle and their pressures and their support network to live that lifestyle. Then we can't put that type of pressure on ourselves. We can do the EAT and we go, yay! I don't need to run faster than this number on race day because bad things will happen. What number do you run depends on the day because you're coached and you're loved and you're winning at life. If you're doing this and paying attention and learning about your body as you go, rather than feeling bad about where you have not been yet, the space between here and your goal should excite you. It should motivate you. It should get you out of bed in the morning. It should make you excited to do the work. God knows I'm excited to do this run I'm about to do with my friend who's going to show up in my house in 20 minutes after I put my kids to bed. And we're finally going to do my long run this weekend since I might not get to run again for the next few days. And I was too tired this morning to be excited to run, but I'm excited right now. And it's not even for accountability that he's coming. It's for to have a safe space where if it's really, really hot, I can be like, man, it's hot as balls. Man, it's hot as balls. It's been a terrible weekend. I'm tired and it is hot as balls out here. And having a safe space to do that with and have a bad run with rather than just being that one person who hasn't slept with, whose kid's been sick, who might not get to run this week, who can't believe that she has to run a marathon in 10 short weeks, I would rather be doing that with somebody else than alone. And if that's where you're at, that's not needing accountability. It's needing a safe space. It's a very different concept. I'm not deficient and neither are you. You're coached. You are loved. Let's go win at the next 2 weeks, even if we can't win at all because Uranus is still in retrograde, but at least you know what's happening now. Bye. See y'all later.